for this title. And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Yes, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Warm Down today. Delighted to be joined by Manchester City legend, Sean Goat. Sean, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Before we get into this, this is brought to you guys by the good folks at The Athletic, and the link for that is in the description. If you want 50% off your annual subscription and a month's free trial, then check it out down below. And we're talking about one of their articles in a little bit. But Sean, obviously you're a Manchester City legend, and I have to say thank you for coming, because I'm sure you would have found something else to do today after than coming after the derby defeat.
Yes, there's a lot of things I could have done, like buried my head in the sand. Yeah, always happy to come by and have a chat, certainly, yeah.
Right, so I wanted to get Sean on because there's an aspect of Sean's career that I don't think many people know. Loads of people recognise you from the Premier League era, obviously very successful against United, yourself particularly, sadly. But you did actually start your footballing career at Manchester United, didn't you? Not a lot of people know that.
Yes. United went to Bermuda on a mid-season break over there in Bermuda, and that's when Sir Alex Ferguson had scouted me, offered me trials. I had played a couple games, scored a goal. He had then offered me a contract, so really excited. First Bermudian to sort of make it professionally since Clyde Basso. I was over the moon and buzzing about that. But yeah, that's how I initially started, yeah.
Do you remember what he said to you when he offered you a trial? Because it must have been a random one, not to be getting picked up on a mid-season tour.
Yeah, it's funny because it took ages for my work permit. At the time, I needed to get a work permit because at the time I had, I think it was 19 international caps, and you needed to have 20 because essentially I was coming here taking a job of an English kid. So I needed to have played another game. So a game was arranged, but it took something like 7-8 months for it to actually come through. So wow. Although I was playing, I was essentially like a youth kid. I wasn't on an actual contract. You know, I was sort of getting, was it like £40 or something like that? Yeah. But when you really want it, it wasn't even about that. Yes, I wanted the actual contract to get sorted, but yeah, it was just happy to be a professional player.
What do you think about when you think about that time at Manchester United? Because we just had a chat in there, and you felt like you weren't good enough for United at the time.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I thought I was. You know, when you're an 18-year-old, and you know, you think, yeah, you're good enough. You just want the chance, the opportunity. When I look back, I know that I wasn't. I was still learning the game, adjusting to the game. At the time, Mark Hughes, Brian McClure, these guys played, you know, if there were 60 games in a season, they played all 60. It wasn't too often, you know, they didn't play games. So it was a really tough time. And then after Donoghue was Mark Robbins. Then it was another lad, Daniel Graham, who was a striker. Then it was myself. So I think even if he had fallen that far down in terms of, you know, pulling myself to play, I think he would have used someone like Lee Sharp, who I was in digs with, and probably played someone like him up the middle. So, yeah. But at the time, they were calling for us, Alex, ahead, because United wasn't doing so well. Mm. And as a kid, you're like, yeah, sack him, you know, because I wanted that chance. Like, yeah, get rid of Sir Alex Ferguson. Get a new manager in. He'll see my ability.
Yeah. When the time came to leave United, what did that feel? Did that feel like a failure, or did it feel like an opportunity to actually get some games?
Well, I didn't want to be seen as a failure because, again, having come from Bermuda and not essentially made it, I was prepared to go lower down. And the story is funny because Sir Alex Ferguson called me in the office and says, look, you know, you've done well, but you're not going to be a part of my plans. You're a bit down in pecking order. But we've done a deal with Rotherham. So I was like, oh, okay.
All right. So you don't even get asked. You just basically like, hey, by the way, you're off in a bit.
Yeah, that's how it was, essentially. Didn't have too much of the agents at that time. So you as an individual were sort of negotiating yourself. But from how I was seeing it was, okay, if I need to go down a level or two, then I need to. I remember going home and I remember thinking, right, let's have a look. Where's Rotherham? and the thing is, I think what players think, you know, in League Two, League One, and even in Championship, they think, you know, everyone is so aware of what they're doing and how they're doing. And when you're sort of in a Premier League club, no one knows what you're doing. They're not really bothered because you're not in the Premier League. So I remember going home looking and thinking, where's Rotherham? First of all, looking at it on a map because I had no idea where it was. And I said, oh, okay, it's hour and a bit from where I currently am, not too bad. But then going down the leagues, it was like, right, okay, Championship. I was going down, no, Rotherham, no. I said, okay. So I was like, had a double check, you know. Then I was like, League One. I was like, all right, let's have a look. No. It's like, oh, hold on. Let me go check back in the Premier. Are they not there? And in the end, it was like League Two. And it was like, that's when it was like, wow. Like, I had to, that was the offer that was there that the club had done. But I, again, it was either go back to Bermuda, being an amateur player, or, you know, start over and build my way back up. So it was hard pill to swallow, but it was something I had no other choice for me. I saw it as that's my ground zero to work from.
What was the career option in Bermuda? Just play amateur and
just play amateur, get a job? Yeah. And players, you know, it's like Sunday league guys. You have your job and you play on Sunday for your bit of you know, exercise, enjoyment, and laughter. And you know, in Bermuda, it's pretty much the same. That was where I got the joy, enjoyed it. But it was nothing really more than that, other than playing for the national team. And that was it.
Was you the only professional player in the national team as well?
Well, at the time of 88 in England, yes. A lad named Kyle Lightbourne came over in 92, and he played for Walsall, then to go on to Coventry when they was in the Premier, and then went to Stoke when they were in Championship. So then, that's about 3-4 years after I'd been there. And then we've had one or two that sort of got into professional teams but didn't really kick on. And now, currently, Naki Wiles is the flag bearer for Bermuda.
But you was the only professional, apart from Lightbourne, that came over. But at the time when you was playing for Bermuda, you was literally the only professional player. Everyone else was an amateur.
Yeah, and it was weird because, you know, you started having certain routines and understandings. I certainly remember later in my time of playing, I'd go back home for a national game, international game. And I don't know, we're playing one of the other Caribbean islands and, you know, pre-match meal would be whatever you wanted. So you'd be in your hotel and guys be ordering like cheeseburgers and fries. And I would just smile because I would just think, This is not right. This is not what you do. But again, I didn't want to go and say, look, guys, this isn't right. This is because they'll be like, oh, you've changed now. You ate burgers back in the day now. No, burgers ain't good for you. So, but now the program is set up proper with the nutrition and everything. But back then, I remember sort of seeing players eat cheeseburgers and all this sort of stuff for pre-match. And I remember asking the guy, I said, can I just get like a bit of grilled chicken and a bit of pasta? And the guy looked at me like, you are. you are. So little funny little situations there, yeah.
What do you think changed in your game at Rotherham to enable you to get back into like a Premier League team?
I think that it just, one, I learned, you know, everyone played 4-4-2. So I sort of understood and learned the game, you know. Every club you went to, every manager that you listened to, that did interviews, you know, they had the same sort of philosophy. And that was, you know, one short, one in behind in terms of strikers, linking up together, partnering together, getting yourselves in the box, get across the near post. And all, you know, it was generally the same sort of stuff. And once I started to understand that, along with my pace, because I wasn't an aggressive player, I'd like to think of myself as more thinking and knowing about the game. So how can I outsmart you to get to the near post, you know? Or sometimes, you know, I used to do things like shout at a level that I'm going near post, knowing that the cross on the ball I'm taking a gamble that he's going to hit it far, but I would say near, but only you could hear me say near. So therefore, you're trying to beat me near post, and I'm faded far. So it's this, you know, it's just little things that you get top players do that the lower level players don't do. But you learned that from being around quality as well.
Joe Royal, it was that took you to Manchester City. When you joined City, they were Division 1, just about to hit Division 2, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was
the old Division.
It was like Championship going on to League One. And it was tough because I actually had moved from a club or a team, Bristol City, who done really well, who actually got promoted from League One to Championship. So we sort of done a crossover. And I remember I left a team that was full of confidence, playing fluid football, players interchanging. Not a lot of interchanging, but players knew the roles and, you know, wingers were delivering crosses and it just all worked. And I went to Man City and there was no confidence. It was just a real eye-opener, like, wow. 30,000, 34,000 coming to these games. And
what year was that, 97, 98? When you joined City?
98. I went to Bristol City, 96, 98. 98, I was at Man City. But the confidence was just not there. And it actually got so bad that we would get on a minibus, go to a local school, which was only sort of 200 yards away, warm up in a gym, and then come on the field, just put your boots on, and the game would start. So when we walked out before the fans were there and everything, we'd walk out and see what boot and footwear we need. But that's how bad it got, that we were getting booed and hammered in a warm-up. I remember times, fouling a player and City fans would go, off. So that's how bad it got, because for City fans, it was like, what are we doing here? What are we doing this low? It was a tough time.
Is that even possible? I mean,
what are you thinking? Is that possible for United to be there?
I hope not. Is it possible for you to imagine what the club has become now from those days when you joined?
Yeah, I think the dreams and the hopes at that time was, could we consistently be a top six team? I mean, when I was there, the top finish we had was ninth. And I think the aspirations was, can we consistently be a top six?
Keegan or Span?
That was Keegan. That was under Kevin Keegan. So, it was having finished ninth, I know the feeling, among certainly the fans would have been, okay, we now need to start being a top six. And what that meant, yes, some better quality players, but just being consistent to be up there. And so when I look at today, no, I didn't foresee world-class players, magnificent facilities for the academy and everything. I did not foresee that at all.
Did you still train at Platt Lane when you were there?
Yes, you used to train at Platt Lane. In fact, I'm not sure if they were United fans, but we used to have fans that used to come and watch us warm up. And we used to do shooting practice, and they'd be watching and be stood there behind the fence saying, "You're rubbish! You're
Platt
crap!"
Platt Lane's on a main road, isn't it?
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Platt Lane's literally like any leisure centre in any town.
Yes.
With a chain link fence.
Yeah.
That anyone can just walk past.
Exactly. So there used to be people that come and watch, on the lunch break or just stop by. And I used to think, are these City fans? Because why would you come, spend your time, stand on the fence, watch while you're having a bit of lunch or whatever, and just be abusing players? Like, you're rubbish, you're useless. And I'm just thinking. So we had no idea, because at the time we used to get stick from the home fans. So we had no idea who it was. But that used to happen quite regular, like doing shooting practice. And so facilities today, protect players, and it's all about that. So, the mental side of the game, when they go into games, it's a clear mind. It's a total clear space of what they need to do.
How much did that affect you when you was playing, where you had home fans abusing you? Because you can understand away fans, can't you?
Yeah.
Part of the game. But
well, for me, I always felt that City was a big club that it either made your career or broke your career. And for me, I wasn't prepared to go to City and then say I wasn't going to make it.
Was there any hesitation going there with your United background?
No, because I had went to, well, one, I went to other clubs and I didn't play for United. I didn't feel that connection. Very thankful of the opportunity, but didn't feel that connection. And so many years had passed through, so I didn't feel that. But for me, I had started using a psychologist, and it was the best thing I ever done because it just took the pressure off of me thinking about as a player when I go and play, I've got to score, because I can tell you probably 99% of players at all levels as strikers go into a game and just think, I've got to score. But there was a bit of a breakdown, you know, in how he made me look at the game. And so that weight and that pressure was just totally off my shoulders. And I just went from strength to strength. I mean, had some brilliant seasons, even, you know, like I said, 32 goals in the championship, getting us promoted. And then when we did get promoted, I was injured for the first 2.5 months, but still finished top goal scorer with 12 goals, having missed 2.5 months. Mm. When he had brought in players like Anelka, George Weah came, but was there so short. He was only there for like 2-3 months. So to still finish and miss 2.5 months of the season, you know, that I feel proud about that.
The City fans did make you a cult hero at City. What's that feel like? And is there a moment that you go, these lot really fucking like me here?
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I think it was the journey that we had, and the journey that they saw that I was able to, you know, come back through that challenge. You know, I remember doing, as the club used to send players to do Q&As at the supporters branches. That don't happen today, but I remember going to them and. You know, the mic would be passed to a guy, and the guy would say, "Well, why are you so shit?" And you know, and he's like, "How do you answer that?"
Oh, this is pre-Twitter, everybody.
Yeah, it's pre-Twitter. Yeah. So that was sort of some of the tough times in the journey I had to go through. You know, and how I responded with it is like, "You listen, you know, maybe I'm not the best player in your eyes, you know, but I just try to do the best job I can for the team. And, you know, for maybe a game or two, I'm not a one, but for one or two other games, I know I'll deliver." But to have that question thrown at you, that just doesn't happen today. Players are just so protected.
I don't even know how you answer it. Why are you so shit? You'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right, mate. Yeah. So that was, and I think I built a rapport because I faced up to that. I didn't, you know, why are you having me go to this if they're giving me stick, if I want the main guys to give stick to? But faced up to it, and just over time, they started to see. And the funniest thing is, for the 5 seasons that I was at the club, I finished top goal scorer in every season. So even my first season when we were going to the gym to warm up rather than on the field, I finished with 21 goals. Which was 4 goals less than what I normally produce in that at that level, which was League One. So I got through that. But then when I started seeing the psychologist the following season, I just kicked on, and just started scoring goals, and I think that's why the rapport is there, and they've seen the journey of. You know, even probably some guys saying, yeah, I should give him stick, but bloody hell, you know, he's the one that's producing. He's the one scoring the goals. He's always scored the goals in vital games. So I think through that journey, that's where the rapport came.
What was the difference for you in the level as you moved up? Because you've obviously played in the third tier with City, and your record didn't actually change that much. I think you scored well over 100 goals, didn't you, for City in only 5 years. That's still prolific, and to be able to do that across multiple levels, I have to take my hat off to that.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant achievement. But what did you notice in terms of the difference in playing at those levels?
I think in the early years, a lot of it was you know, we say crash, burn, wallop. But I've always win the second ball, you know, get the balls wide, balls in the box. And so I will go to a game and not know if I'll get a chance. And that's the unique difference with slightly better, when you start playing a certain way with better players, you know you can go to bed and go to a game knowing I'm going to get a chance or two. Aguero, Sergio, know they're going to get opportunities. I think there was probably a time United a couple of years ago, I don't think your strikers knew they were going to get a chance. And so whilst it's easy to say his rubbish, he's not delivering, he costs X amount of millions, I think some of that has to do with the manager and the style of play. Because you just can't say, well, I've put a £50 million player up top, but then we're just kicking the ball up to him in the air and he's 5'5" and we're saying, well, why are you not scoring? You've got to provide a way and a platform that allows him to showcase his abilities to get those opportunities. So the better players I played with, the more opportunities that I got because we played slightly different. You know, I think one of the real turning points, certainly talking about the quality of players, a player named Ali Benabia, when he came to City, he was a previous French player of the year. And you obviously don't become French player of the year. You have to be some sort of player. And we had no idea who he was. And I think Kevin Keegan had sort of nicked him from Sunderland because he was about to sign for Sunderland. And somehow Kevin Keegan had done a deal and got him. But this guy was phenomenal in terms of his technical ability. We started to play more rather than, you know, kick it, flick it on, get it wide, get in your box. You know, that style of football, it was, no, we're gonna play. And a lot of discussion was at the time, because Ayo Berkovic was another one that could play. And again, he weren't the player that you say, we're good when you're 50-50s. He can get it done, and he was good at the 15, 20-yard passes, keep possession. So a lot of discussion was, will he sort of play those two in the team rather than just playing one? And a few of the games, he played both of them, and we actually started to dominate a lot of possession. Not to the degree that you see teams do today, but these guys then started sliding balls in my favor, rather than I've slid you in, but still with the defender's favor, and I'm going to out-muscle him to get some sort of luck, so it becomes a chance. And I think that was the change in terms of playing with the quality and the better, just playing with the better quality player, because they think differently, they do things differently, their angles are different. And so I just sort of rose to that, because I'd always been a student of the game. You know, when I played against United, for instance, you know, I knew about Rio Ferdinand. I looked at Rio Ferdinand as to what's his strengths, what's his weaknesses, knowing that he's calm on the ball, he's confident on the ball to come out. And my thinking is, when I get the opportunity, can I get around him? Because he feels that confident, perhaps I can nick something that could create opportunity for us or a chance for myself. So I was always a student of the game as to who I played against and what they were about.
I've heard Kevin Keegan didn't have tactics. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. I was really disappointed because, you know, for me, when Kevin Keegan became the manager, I was like, brilliant. You know, a top Liverpool striker, England manager. So it was like a lot of boxes for a Bermudian to be coached and managed under, and also a striker, so he can give me those finite sort of quality.
But no.
And Keegan's philosophy, I think, for me, in my time under him, was I got 11 good players on the field, and my 11 good players will find a way to be better than the opposition. And I can see why when he played, you know, when he's manager of England and England played Brazil or Italy or one of these other top countries, that he struggled because he didn't have that bit of nose or knowledge to say, we're going to do this tactically that's going to really adjust the game. I'm going to move a player and do something a little differently.
Yeah, or mark this guy out of the game because he's the playmaker.
He's the playmaker, yeah.
Nothing.
No.
Just and go and play. And
so we always play five-a-sides, and he'll just say, players in my team need to want the ball. You got to want the ball. But it's, you know, saying you got to want the ball, but there's also a time when a player is in a bad position, and if you're giving it to him, then you're stitching him up.
Yeah.
And so he never had the tactics to say, this is how we're going to play. This is how you just say every player in my team needs to want the ball. I love that part about it, but he didn't give us the detail that you get with top managers now. You get that detail, and you get that understanding of how the pitchers, how to play out, how to, when you're in the midfield, these are your options. And then clever players can expand upon that. They're like, oh, those are my options. I could also do this. Yeah. And that will elevate that whole scenario. So it was disappointing when, again, a top striker, also England manager. So I'm thinking he's managed the best in England. And I'm thinking, I'm now going to get that knowledge to improve myself and obviously us as a team. But, yeah, it was a little disappointing. So a lot of his games he managed, there were always the thing that happened in the last 5 minutes. So if you had a great touch or a great shot, the last 5 minutes was like, brilliant, well done, keep it going. But the other 40 minutes, you could have made a few mistakes. Now, likewise, if you came off the last 5-10 minutes and made two errors.
You're the worst player ever.
You're the worst player. And so it was never, and you know, it was never solution-based. And that's what I learned from Keegan, that he never had solutions to situations other than the general normal stuff.
Ronaldo, stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, run, give it to him because he's got the beating at the fullback. Well, you know, if you understand watching the game with some chips, you're like, they got to get it to the winger because he's got the beating of him. You know what I mean? So it was nothing new or different that made me go that. The one thing I would say, what he was really good at is just saying that, you know, you guys are brilliant. I wouldn't want any other player.
Like, it gives you belief.
Gives you belief, but the tactical side, for me, I was disappointed.
Who was the best manager you worked under?
It's funny because I never had a manager that was like the current managers in terms of the, you know, the knowledge of the game and the tactical nous and everything. But I would have to say, Joe Royal, because
I was thinking Joe Royal.
And the reason is because Joe Royal had the guts to stick with me when the fans were probably saying, no, go with someone else. So his belief in me made me want to prove him right. And then inadvertently prove the fans, like, to show them that actually he was right to make their decision. And then they started to support, you know. But this wasn't in the first year. This was going into perhaps the middle of the second season, where they then started creating songs and realizing, like, the history one that scores the goals. Yeah.
It's not a bad song as well, to be fair. No, no. I fucking hate it.
Go on. Feed the goat. Nah.
I'm not singing it. How do you reckon you'd get on? Do you think your style of play would suit this current City team?
Yes, because what I know my strength was, I knew where to be when the ball was in the final third. That became my niche, you know. I knew where to be when the ball was in the final third. Whether, you know, the defender has to go over 2 yards that way, so I also step a yard this way. And all I'm looking for is either that pass coming in firm enough that my first touch beats him, you know, or actually where it's ricocheting in and around the box from a corner. Yeah, I just knew where to be. I could see situations and see, I've just got to step out of this. It will fall right here. And true enough, it falls right in that area where I'm able to smash it in. So when I look at this current City team, yes, because again, De Bruyne, the way he crosses when he's out wide, the way he gives through balls, now that it don't really matter where the defender is. If you're on the same, if you got that understanding, you could still get those opportunities. So, I do feel I can play any City team. And then people may say, but that's a crazy statement. But
I don't think it is.
I because I see City well enough to know that, you know, a lot of also what they do attacking wise is also coached. I think back in the day, coaches used to say, well, when you get to the final third, you let the players express themselves. But I actually think that a lot of attacking play. Certainly when I look at City, the things that are repetitive that lets me know for certain that they work on that.
Oh, yeah. That to the fullback, to the player on the byline, back to the penalty spot. That's a City goal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know where it's going to be. And I'm sure if you're a centre forward, you can anticipate that.
It's very seldom City will, you know, a player will get the ball, let's say, 8, 10 yards outside the corner of the 18-yard box as a wide player. And you would get a De Bruyne or Bernardo Silva that will make almost a straight run towards the byline. And that pass is very seldom not made because they also run on the back of their player. And what that means is the centre-back has to come out. Mm. And when the centre-back comes out, De Bruyne or whoever it is flashes that ball across. That means the striker is now in the middle free because the other centre-back is on the backside of the striker. So I see that happen so many times that I know. Because I see it happen so many times, I know that pass is never not made. It's almost always made, which tells me they work on it. It's just like when a team set up for a corner against and they go, they've always got a player that stood on the post. Well, that's worked on. He ain't stood there because he wants to stand there. And that's the same thing. So I see certain things and patterns that happen with City that's worked on. And I think that's where the game's evolved now, where the top managers coach pitchers even in attacking.
There's one player that might have the opposite trajectory to what you had. Didn't make it at Manchester City. He's gone elsewhere, proved himself. And now he's looking at a move possibly to Manchester United with Jadon Sancho. One, why don't you think he was given the opportunity at City? And two, do you think he'd be a success at United?
I think he wasn't given the opportunity because I think at the time, City were just playing phenomenal football. City wide players in Sané and Sterling, even Bernardo Silva, these guys were just producing the highest level. So from, I guess from Pep Guardiola or Man City's point of view was, yes, you're good, but perhaps in another year and a half to 2 years is your time and we can start feeding you in because the guys who are actually there, they're only 22, 23. So I think it just happened to be with Pep's eyes that the guys who I'm currently got are at the top of the tree. If you're saying they're white players better, you're probably saying, yep, Messi comes into the equation. Well, it has to be a Messi or, you know, or one or two other players. But these players were so at the top of their game. It was difficult. And if anyone came out and said, Pep's a fool to not be putting him in, would have been the only individual because the players were playing that well. So you could partially see from Pep's point of view why. But he also was one of those that needed to go out and play. And I think he's opened the eyes and the doors for other young players to think, well, if I'm good enough, yeah, let me go learn a different culture, learn a different way of playing, get games under my belt, get really good experience, Champions League and top level league as well. Why not? And he, for me, when I watch him, he excites me. He's that player that gets bums off seats. It goes wide to him. Whenever you see him, even in England, it goes wide to him and fans just sort of stand up. And it's like, what's he going to do? Because I really like him. And I'd love him to come back to England because one of the best players playing in the Premier League.
Even if it's a United shirt.
For me, I love the game. And, you know, I love the game. So even if it's in a United shirt, I want the best players to be playing the league because, again, at heart, I'm a student. So I want to see best players play against the best players. And I want to see how players cope with. So whether it's at United, whether it's at Chelsea, whether it's at Aston Villa, I want to see the best players playing her and the best managers.
The thing with Sancho when he was playing, I used to watch him, obviously, when he'd lined up against United in the 18s and stuff like that. You hold your breath when he gets the ball because you're like, what is he about to do? Because he was so lethal every single time he got it.
Yeah, the guy's exciting. He's a really exciting guy. You know, he gets the ball, he runs at it, he asks questions. And you know, when I think about England, what an exciting time and period. I, you know, I, one of the things I said, well, no, in hindsight, Southgate being continued on with the new deal, I think was a brilliant, because he's now the new evolved manager. And now he's also got the quality and the talent to go with this thinking. So Jadon Sancho, Sterling, Rashford, Hudson-Odoi. I'm trying to think. I mean, that wide position is ridiculous.
Same as right back.
Right back stacked. Is stacked. And if you got players like them, it may seem, this may seem weird with being on a United program, but it almost suits somebody like Wan-Bissaka to be the right back, because Asensio don't need nobody to go around him. A Sterling doesn't need no one to go around him. A Rashford doesn't need no one to go around him as fullbacks. If Rashford's playing on the left, then yes, he can have that. It's great, because we know he wants to come in on his right foot. But essentially, if these guys are playing on their right side, they don't necessarily need a player going around them, because they have that, you know, 8 times out of 10, they go across the players. And if you got a Wan-Bissaka that's behind you, for me, I think he's the best one-on-one defender. He's got that mixture of that old-fashioned defending. And you would think someone defends like him would give up more penalties, but he always gets it.
If he gives one away a year, it's well worth it.
Yeah, it's well worth it. So I think he's a quality defender. I've seen enough of Sterling playing against him that at this moment in time, he's definitely got Sterling in his pocket. And so it'll be interesting to see the next 2 or 3 games when they play against each other, because
if he's learning from it.
Yeah. And I'm sure Sterling will be wanting to change that, because I think it's an obvious that people see. There's not been many games that I think Sterling's played against him and got the better of him in the last 2 seasons.
Southgate needs to make a massive decision on how he's going to play with this England squad, because once he figures out how he's going to play, I could see Trent and Harry Kane being a great partnership in putting balls in the box for him. But if he decides to go with more of a false nine, someone maybe like Sterling to play in the middle and finish chances off, I think you go with an entirely different sort of system. You're not going to put high balls in for Sterling, are you?
No, you're not. Not at all. And the other thing as well, sometimes combinations, meaning players that play together, in the whole conversation, talking about right backs, talking about Trent, talking about Wan-Bissaka, I haven't even thought about Kyle Walker. Kyle Walker will have an understanding with Sterling. So I know that combinations also work, or that understanding, you know. And I think when you think about England, someone like Harry Kane, I know drifted to England, but Harry Kane, because he had that relationship and understanding with Dele Alli, that worked. But I think the pressure is on Dele Alli now, because the quality that's coming through is coming fast. And he, for me, I think he needs to up his game foreseeable future between now and the end of the season for people to go, yeah, Dele Alli should be involved in this, because, well, he should be, but should he be starting? When I see some of the players that are producing at, you know, so many clubs, He's got a pressure. He's got pressure coming.
Madison and Trent should be both looked at well before him.
Yeah.
Southgate's got to be brave, I think. He's got to be brave, stick to his guns of what his style of play is going to be and what players fit that system better. Because I think the golden generation, the Beckham, Gerrard, Lampard sort of era, it was too many of the big names got picked.
Yeah.
And perhaps Michael Carrick might have been a better fit for the team.
For the team, yeah.
And I think I can see us going down the same road again, where we pick what's so-called the better players and not necessarily the better team. And I think they'll underachieve because of that, I think.
I actually think he's aware of that, and I think he'll be the first to make those brave decisions. I think I'm sure it was him that made the decision when he had to ease Wayne Rooney out, which would not have been an easy thing. You know, top goal scorer, one of your best players, most experienced players, and to go a different direction, you know, as we say today, go a different direction. Basically, it's just going with a younger player that's got this energy and appetite, that's also going to do everything you say, rather than a Wayne Rooney who is world-class quality that may say, I don't quite agree with that, so I'm going to do 80% of what you're asking. The other 20%, I'm going to do because this is serving me good. Just throwing a scenario out there. So he made that brave decision. So I think he is the one that will have England playing one a really attractive brand of football mixed with the grit, determination, pace, but also with that excitement. With that excitement, because countries have always feared England. You know, when I've watched, they've always feared England, but I think England's now got a lot more flair about the game and the aggression, to which is that British grit to still see them through. So I think this is a great period for. I won't be surprised if England go on with the Euros and also with the World Cup.
I think in Rashford and Sancho, just those two alone, forgetting Grealish, Madison, Kane, Sterling, in those two alone, I think they've got people that are capable of winning matches and like literally just changing a game.
Exciting players.
Let's talk a little bit about this weekend's derby. Sorry to be so
short. Is it time for a commercial break? Pay some bills? And you got to pay some bills now?
Yeah, sure.
We'd like to thank, who's our sponsors?
This is sponsored by The Athletic. Daniel Taylor's done an article, which I'll throw a link to in the description. And I'd like your thoughts on this. He's reckoning City should ditch Otamendi the same way they did Di Michaelis following the derby defeat. I don't think it was all on Otamendi this weekend.
No. City had a bad day at the office. City's won things with Mendy. I wouldn't put. Look, there's a couple errors that we've had from our goalkeeper that Addison has been.
He didn't have a good game.
Didn't have a good game, but I would say that he's almost been near perfect in terms of not goals and not being conceded because of him. So when you have a game. And you drop 3 points because your keeper's made one. He's probably earned the club 9-12 points. So, for me, I would just take that one and say, yeah, Addison, we're in at it at an off day. But I think this is when you have a situation like this, you start reaching and calling out and saying, you know, player, this player, that player. City had an off day, you know. Had all the possession. I can't remember. I think it was something like 7 shots, where United had almost double.
7-12, I think it might have been. Something like that.
Yeah. So whereas that's not City. Normally, somewhere it's reversed. So it just showed you that with all the possession, in the final third, City did not produce, did not deliver. And I wouldn't say that was down to Mendy.
No, I don't think
it's a strange.
I think he's just trying to draw lines with, you know, what Rashford did to Di Michaelis, and then thinking that that's something that could have. But if you want to read it, I'll throw a link to that in the description. You had quite a bit of success. I don't really want to do this. What's your memories of Manchester derbies?
My memories of Manchester derbies? United were the yardstick. They were the team that everyone wanted to beat because they had all the success, they win all the trophies on a consistent basis. And so for me, playing against United and to prove that I'm as good on the day as these players, then that's what it was about for me. So, you know, I think back to sort of the derby and Gary Neville with a great assist. It was a great pass from Gary Neville. I'm not sure if everyone recalls this one. Look it up. No, but listen, I you always got up for games, but again, because United were the yardstick, they, you know, the quality of football they played, the way they dominated. For me, the little kid from Bermuda wanted to see just where are you? Where are you on a level when you're talking about playing against these players? And so I've always wanted to do myself proud, my country proud, when I represent it, playing for my club. Great assist by Gary Neville. But I always take joy in the game that was at Old Trafford. Came on as a sub and scored in 9 seconds. So I think it still stands as the quickest goal as a sub in the Premier. And the funny thing was, I used to score goals against other teams, and I always wanted to sort of do the celebration of like their most prized player. So scoring against Newcastle, I'd go and do the Alan Shearer celebration. So when I scored against United in that, you wouldn't recognize it because it was on a set piece. But I wanted to stand up and be like Cantona, right? Do a Cantona celebration. But I got mobbed so quick. And I was just like, gosh, I'm messing my celebration up. So if you look, you probably see my head sticking up. Like I'm trying to like do this, look around, like the old Cantona celebration. So I knew that sort of winds play, you know, winds our position up. But
you might have just ruined my favorite song.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was a privilege and a great time to play against United because the best players, the tempo, the tactics, you know, the aggression in the game, you know, the leaders, the never say die, you know, Gary Neville undoubtedly at the time was the best fullback. And yeah, he, you know, I'd love to see him do commentary over that. Over that little piece of that mistake.
Do you know what? Have you been watching the soccer boxing that he does?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really good, isn't
it? It's really good, yeah.
I wouldn't mind actually seeing that because normally it's him having a laugh at someone else's expense.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind. That would be interesting.
No, it's good. It's good. One day he'd invite me on. Yeah. We'd have a little crack and some popcorn.
I'm sure the blue quarter of Manchester would probably really enjoy that.
Yes.
The future then for you, you've currently just launched or just announced the launch of the Sean Goater International Academy. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yes, I personally feel that in Bermuda we have some young talent, ability wise, that can make it in the UK, in England, whether it's League Two and eventually moving on, or whether it's non-league and eventually moving on up the ladder. And I feel that what's needed is them to be here within an academy, but given the right tools, and me having had the journey myself, you know, I offer one or two things that other academies don't offer, but primarily to help the young Bermudians. It's not only for Bermudians, it's also for the local kids. So what I know is that the young British kids, what they have in abundance is an aggression. They have a never say die. The Bermuda kid will come with ability, but they wouldn't have that never say die attitude, that determination. And I think this is what I learned, again, from playing with English players, British players, learning that, you know, roll your sleeves up and really understanding that. Whereas the Bermudians, like, it's a bit cold today, I don't know. But being around that, training with that, being in that environment, you they'll then learn that. And I'm sure there'll be some things that the British kid, the kid from Manchester will also learn from the Bermudian. So yeah, I'm excited about this, looking at this for September launch, and having again this mixed fusion of local kids with Bermudians, I think could be a good mix as well.
Awesome. And you also did a little bit of coaching, don't you? Are you currently coaching now?
No, I was pursuing the coaching, wasn't really getting the opportunities, but again, I think this allows me the opportunity. I have an A license. I have the ability to, again, I like to look at teams and sort of study, you know, what they do from set pieces to playing out the back, just a student of the game. So I have the ability to really stick to a philosophy and say, right, this is the way the academy is going to play. And I think from my experience, players always want to be challenged. And why players get bored at whatever level is because they know what's coming. And they know that the coach says, just go long, knock it in the corner, you know, win the second balls and all that. Whereas if you have a way of saying, if a team plays this way, this is how we're going to play. These are your scenarios. You as a player, when you're on the ball, you know you've now got these two, three options. You can choose the best option because you've got ability, and with your ability, you can do that. And players like that sort of challenge. And if they're not being challenged, they get stagnant and bored. And I've had some managers like that. So as players, what you do is you just say, because players, you do know the answer as well. You know the answer because you're out there experiencing the scenario and the situation. Mm. You know your player's dragging you somewhere, creating a space for another player, and you have the solutions. So I'm excited about this and really looking forward to it.
I will throw a link to that in the description as well if you want to go and check out what he's up to. But Sean, thank you very much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure. If you guys want to check out more of what's going on with his academy, I'll throw that down there. And it says also brought to you by The Athletic, as we mentioned. And if you would like to check out more of that and get 50% off your trial and your yearly subscription, link for that is in the description. But thanks for tuning in. Thank you again to Sean.
Absolute pleasure.
And we'll see you in the next one.
Blue Moon!